I think I'm entitled.
You want answers.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
Welcome back to our special election night coverage in San Francisco. Voters are strongly backing two public safety measures that really hone in on law enforcement in particular. So let's start with Prop E. Prop E would give police more powers, including access to more surveillance cameras, facial recognition technology. It would lift restrictions on police chases in the city. And right now, with a good amount of the vote in, 61% of voters are in support of this, sending a strong message that they want police to have more tools to fight crime. Then we have Prop B, which called for an increase in police staffing. It's a so-called cop tax. This one squarely being rejected by voters tonight. A huge margin here. 66% of voters say they want nothing to do with this.
Well, that's really quite an event happening in San Francisco last night as they were voting. And the key takeaway is, voters in San Francisco passed a ballot measure on Super Tuesday that would expand police powers, require drug screening for welfare recipients, and also reduced restrictions on commercial real estate development was also kind of written into it. That's a massive defeat for the left in a progressive city. Are you in shock? Well, yesterday we told you about how the state of Oregon had decided to recriminalize many drugs. They started this program 2+ years ago that we're going to decriminalize drugs if you just have them for your personal use. And they see zombies walking everywhere around Oregon. And they finally decided that we can't have that. I mean, they're approaching our children. They're just sprawled out on the sidewalks, the streets, shooting needles into their arms. And no, we didn't expect that. I don't think they could say that, but maybe some did. They didn't expect it would be like that. And of course, the massive amounts of crime. City of Austin, Texas, breaks my heart. The city of my birth is blue. The state of Texas is red. The city is blue because it's got the University of Texas there. They got a lot of libs in various positions in the university and on campus. And they have also had to make a decision not too long ago that that idea about defunding police is not a good idea. What could go wrong? Well, they found out, didn't they? And then we got other blue cities facing a rude awakening. I'll break it down for you. First of all, thanks to have you on board again for us. Here we are, March 6, 2024, the second hour of Larry Connors USA, back-to-back for you every Monday through Friday night. You can't miss us. If by chance you do, I'll remind you, you can always go to Larry Connors USA Facebook or LarryConnorsUSA.com, and you'll be able to pull up what you missed, both the audio and video, because we are, when we're on the air with you, streaming video. So you can watch. You can watch what I'm holding up in my hand right here. You see this? This is a powerful weapon in the hands of the right person. Ah, I better put it down. I'm not sure on the right person. But anyway, if you're watching, you saw it. And if you're not, you should have been watching. But if you miss it, again, you go to LarryConnorsUSA.com and pull it up, or LarryConnorsUSA Facebook. And let me remind you again, with George Soros and his group of progressives taking over 200-plus stations owned by the Odyssey Group as they go into bankruptcy, there are going to be a lot of stations that you thought would be good conservative voices. First of all, pray for those who are working there, and they are really doing their best to be honest with you and present good conservative information. I fear that they're going to be facing the axe pretty soon, because they're not going to want to use those stations to spread more MAGA extremism, as they want to call it. They'll be turned into first-hand propaganda machines. So that gives me reason to point out to you that News Talk STL is number one for the most live and local conservative talk in St. Louis. Number one. And certainly I'm glad to have you on board with Larry Connors, USA. You're making the program bigger as we go every day. All right, I mentioned there are other cities that are going through withdrawal pains. They realize, boy, we got a big issue here. We got crime, and now we got all these illegals flooding into our cities. Good point. Way, way, way north of our southern border would be New York City and Mayor Eric Adams.
I don't believe people who are violent in our city and commit repeated crimes should have the privilege of being in our city.
We have some crews with the migrants committing crime. We're going to deal with them like any other crime wave we have and put them in jail. And quite frankly, what the mayor just said, if you come to this country seeking the American dream, and while you're waiting for that, for your status to be upgraded, and you're committing violent crimes against New Yorkers or this country, you should be put in jail. And once that term is over, you forfeit the right to the American dream and get out of our country.
Yeah, it's as simple as that. Now, if that had happened, by the way, the guy who is now charged with Lake and Hope Riley, he entered the country illegally near El Paso. Border Patrol catches him. They take down his name and information that he's willing to share with them, and they don't have any way to really do a background check on him, and they basically give him a parole paper to roam about the country and make sure you report back to us for a court date 6, maybe 8+ years down the road. Right, that's going to happen. So he goes to New York City. He's busted for another crime, and New York City police have him in jail. They're holding him. As Mayor Eric Adams would say, you know, he's guilty of another crime. We should deport him. But New York City didn't do that. They basically let him go, did not hold him for immigration's customs enforcement to come and pick him up as they were wanting to do. They just released them. And that's happening all over many blue cities and states as I speak. Chicago, it's happening there. It's happening in the state of Illinois. San Francisco, Los Angeles, all up and down California, and obviously many others. They're not going to hold them for federal agents to pick up. So what happened with this illegal? He makes his way down to Athens, Georgia. And police say he is the one for killing, stoning, mashing her skull in to where I can't imagine what it took for parents to stand there and try to identify the remains of their daughter after she had been brutally assaulted. And this illegal that came into our nation 2+ years ago has been arrested and charged with a crime. Now, I'm going to caution you on something. As much gut-wrenching as it takes thinking about what happened to that young girl, this guy is still innocent until proven guilty. But if he's the one who did it, she would be alive if he weren't in the country. Larry, you can't say that. Maybe somebody else would have attacked her, right? You're right. You're right. Somebody else might have. But it would not have been this guy. And same thing for many who have lost loved ones where there have been convictions of DUI individuals that are illegal in our country. And some cities and states are basically willing to let them go if they're drunk while intoxicated and kill someone. They're not going to make a big deal out of it, maybe 3 years or so, but they're still not kicking them out of the country. Contrary to what you're going to hear from DHS Secretary Mayorkas on a regular basis, they are not protecting American citizens. It's as simple as that. Now, in San Francisco, they passed this ballot measure. But as you heard, one part of it did not pass. You know why it didn't pass? Because part of it involved a what they call a cop tax. That part didn't pass because they're going to tell the San Francisco citizens, oh, to make sure we can fund our police again, you're going to have to pony up more money. You had the money before you cut everybody. Where's that money? So they rejected that part. So I don't know how it's going to come together, but I do like the fact that this wave of crime they've had in the city, which, by the way, began even before the BLM movement. I want to point that out. Measure E, which expanded police powers, allowing police to use drones, install surveillance cameras, won by a margin of nearly 60 to 40%. Measure F, which requires drug testing for those receiving public assistance from the city, won 63 to 37%. The only one that didn't go was the Measure B, which was to raise taxes to increase police spending and staffing, as if they're not already being taxed enough in California and San Francisco. Well, last night's Super Tuesday voting put the final nail in the Nikki Haley's coffin in the run for the White House. But you need to take note of several things. First, she did not actually end her campaign.
Just over a year ago, I launched my campaign for president. When I began, I said the campaign was grounded in my love for our country. Just last week, my mother, a first-generation immigrant, got to vote for her daughter for president. Only in America. I am filled with the gratitude for the outpouring of support we've received from all across our great country. But the time has now come to suspend my campaign. I said I wanted Americans to have their voices heard. I have done that. I have no regrets. And although I will no longer be a candidate, I will not stop using my voice for the things I believe in. Our national debt will eventually crush our economy. A smaller federal government is not only necessary for our freedom, it is necessary for our survival. The road to socialism is the road to ruin.
Absolutely, it truly is. I like the fact that she pointed out that my mother, an immigrant, had a chance to vote for her daughter for the office of presidency. Only in America. That is very true, Nikki Haley. But two things. She suspended her campaign, did not end it, means she still holds the monies that have been contributed to the campaign, not for her personal use, but she could put them into play in other political races and work them through PACs, things of that nature. And she also did not endorse Donald Trump so far. Nikki Haley.
In all likelihood, Donald Trump will be the Republican nominee when our party convention meets in July. I congratulate him and wish him well. I wish anyone well who would be America's president. Our country is too precious to let our differences divide us. I have always been a conservative Republican and always supported the Republican nominee. But on this question, as she did on so many others, Margaret Thatcher provided some good advice when she said, quote, never just follow the crowd. Always make up your own mind. It is now up to Donald Trump to earn the votes of those in our party and beyond it who did not support him. And I hope he does that.
Now, there raises the question, of course, will her supporters stand in line for Donald Trump? That question got asked to Missouri Congressman Mark Alford.
I certainly hope so. Look, this is an investment not just in Donald J. Trump. This is an investment in America. We cannot afford another 4 years of a feckless, failing, flailing president in the White House. Mm-hmm. Someone who has really done a great disservice to our nation with an open border, with the insecurity that we feel in our economy. This presidential election is going to be about security, Maria. Border security, economic security, and our national security. Yeah. Donald J. Trump's the only one who can bring our nation back to have those security measures in place to make Americans feel safe again.
Yeah. Yep. And hopefully they will. But if you listen to the state-controlled media people like Joy Reid, they don't really understand really what's happening. But still, Nikki Haley says we need to expand the tent.
At its best, politics is about bringing people into your cause, not turning them away. And our conservative cause badly needs more people. This is now his time for choosing. I end my campaign with the same words I began it, from the book of Joshua. I direct them to all Americans, but especially to so many of the women and girls out there who put their faith in our campaign. Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged, for God will be with you wherever you go. In this campaign, I have seen our country's greatness. From the bottom of my heart, thank you, America. God bless you.
Nikki Haley, but again, to expand the tent, you got folks like Joy Reid and the state-controlled media saying, GOP voters don't care about all that nonsense.
Republican voters don't vote that way. They don't vote based on economics or based on the benefits they're getting economically from the president. They're increasingly, from the Tea Party on, they're voting on race. They're voting on this idea of an invasion of brown people over the border.
The issue of race animates Donald Trump. The issue of race has long animated the evangelical movement.
I don't think enough has been talked about that Trump has had way more votes against him in these primaries than President Biden. You know, President Biden is dominating every primary contest in a way that Donald Trump would like to dominate, and he is not.
That is the irrelevant now Missouri former Senator McCaskill. Joe Concha, Fox News contributor and analyst, has his response to what Joy Reid had to say. Play the race card.
It's the media, instead of crying wolf, crying race, Todd, right? And it's on MSNBC, it's as predictable as the sun rising in the east, birds flying south of the winter, and, you know, something we could agree on, the Cowboys losing in January. These are all predictable things. Thank you. And I did enjoy how, you know, Rachel Maddow, whose picture you can find next to the word pious, criticized her own parent network, NBC, for airing Trump's victory speech. But to get back to that montage that you played, they say that Republican voters are only voting on race. No. Exit polls show that they're voting on the economy and inflation. That's number one, according to our most recent Fox News poll. Number two is immigration, but it's not about brown people coming over the border. It's about budgets in major cities being exhausted in terms of cutting police, sanitation, education, in terms of fentanyl coming over and killing a record number of Americans. It's about the terror watch that we see as far as terrorists coming across the border, hundreds of them, according to the Department of Homeland Security themselves, that have been apprehended. So this isn't a racism thing as far as how Republicans are voting. They're voting on security as far as this country. They're voting on economic security. Those are the top two issues, on top of crime as well. But this is what that network pushes over and over again, because I guess they're telling their dwindling audience what they want to hear.
Yeah, play the race card. Our audience will applaud. Coming up, a co-author of the book that says, don't look upon artificial intelligence as a threat to you. Lock and load, ready on the right.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
Question, do you know what vermiculite is? It is an insulation in the attics of hundreds of thousands of homes and public buildings. Looks like kitty litter, but often contains asbestos. Wellington Environmental is the largest company in the Midwest that can remove that hazard for you. Wellington has what is called the General, a powerful industrial vacuum that can suck vermiculite out of the attic. Hang on, there's something else you should know. Many of you might qualify for up to a $4,000 rebate. You should at least contact Wellington to see if you qualify. And here's something else. Wellington arrives at the time they give you, not sometime within 4 hours. 314-644-4930. 1-800-644-4930. WellingtonSTL.com. WellingtonSTL.com. Wellington Environmental. Your world. Cleaner. Better. Safer. Be well with Wellington.
Talk radio made in St. Louis.
Very excited for what you guys are doing for the St. Louis community.
For St. Louis.
Relevant local talk.
Saying what we are thinking.
This is News Talk STL.
No, you guys are awesome. I love you. And it really is a tremendous honor to be on the station.
News, analysis, and opinion.
Thanks for covering the local angle.
Come on, people. This is America.
We better open our eyes.
Really local? Really good.
News Talk STL at 101.9/94.1
and NewsTalkSTL.com.
Make plans now to be at Lit Cigar Lounge this month. Lit is hosting numerous events. That includes live music. And there's an easy way to check on what is happening and when. You simply go to Lit Cigar Lounge Facebook. By the way, to go to Lit, you don't have to be a member. Everyone is welcome. Just another reason that Lit won Best Cigar Lounge 2 years in a row. Lit Cigar Lounge in Chesterfield. Lit Cigar Lounge in Chesterfield. Lit Cigar Lounge on Facebook.
Hey, St. Louis, my name is Rob Carter. My new primetime show will explore the collaboration between corrupt media and our corrupted political system. From manipulated elections, open borders, mandated medicines, and unconstitutional lockdowns, what is going on? The Rob Carter Show. Let's talk about it on The Rob Carter Show. Join me weeknights from 8 to 10 p.m. on News Talk STL.
Rob Carter, live and local, weeknights at 8 on News Talk STL. This is News Talk STL. This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
Welcome back. My guest coming up is Tom Kalopoulos. He is a founder and chair of a Delphi think tank. His co-author, Nathaniel Palmer, they wrote the book Gigatrends, Six Forces That Are Changing the Future for Billions, Billions. Now, the first thing that comes to mind for many is AI, artificial intelligence. And does that mean changing the future for billions, basically kicking you out of your job? Tom, glad to have you on board. Welcome.
Hey, Larry, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
Well, let's begin with that. When we talk about AI coming in, you guys have said that we need to look at it as a friend. Is that too strong of a word?
Well, to some it'll be a friend. I mean, it's a collaborator at the very least, but look, you're spot on. A lot of jobs are definitely going to be threatened. Let's not hold our punches here. AI is going to have a very fast effect on the job market and on labor like we've never seen before. I mean, we've been through factory automation. We've been through farm automation. All this has happened over and over again, but we've had decades or in some cases centuries to retool and retrain. We're not going to have that luxury this time around, and that's going to put a lot of pressure on us to rethink how we deploy this thing.
Is this comparable, then, to the Industrial Revolution, only at a warp speed?
Yeah, I mean, you hit the nail right in the head. It is comparable, but at warp speed, and this is where we really have to. I'm not saying we have to put the brakes on necessarily, but I think as a society, we're going to have to make sure we do it in an ethical way, that we do it deliberately. And that we think about the consequences and make sure that we have safety nets in place for those people that are going to be put out of work. Look, at the same time, it's going to create jobs, but that's going to happen over a longer period of time. So at some point, 30, 40 years down the road, this will reach an equilibrium, but in the meantime, there's going to be a lot of disruption.
Tom, is it going to create jobs that are going to be high-paying or just menial jobs? I mean, it looks like a lot of menial jobs, and I'm not trying to diss on people that are waiters, waitresses, or taking your order at the check, you know, the McDonald's, wherever you're going, but already they put kiosk in place, or I went to one restaurant that not even a server brings it to you, comes down a little robot that's got your table number on it, then the waiter later comes on and cleans everything up, but what kind of jobs are we talking about?
Look, I think we're talking first and foremost about those kinds of jobs, jobs on the front line that don't require a whole lot of training, a whole lot of education. Those are the ones that are most at risk. But, you know, Larry, I look at things like toll takers. It used to be when I was a kid, when you were a kid, you know, you'd pay someone to go through a toll. Now you rarely see a human being at a toll booth. You know, to some degree, that's sort of a waste of a human being to put them in that role.
Yeah.
But you got to train these people. You know, you got to give them work to do, and it's going to take a while to retrain that workforce. I think that's the biggest risk here. But it will create a lot of high-paying jobs. It'll sort of up our game, and we'll have to get more creative and more innovative as human beings. And that's what technology does to us over and over again.
Your signal is breaking from time to time. I don't know if artificial intelligence is interfering with you. Which, by the way, I should point out, Tom, I should have said in the beginning, I am an expert in artificial intelligence. That's all I have is artificial intelligence. So let me look at this book again. It's titled, it's fascinating just by the title, Six Forces That Are Changing the Future for Billions. We're talking about gigatrends was the beginning of it, gigatrends. What is a gigatrend?
A gigatrend, Larry, is anything that has the potential to change the lives of billions of people. So radio was a gigatrend. The internet was certainly a gigatrend. Advances in agriculture that allowed us to automate farming, those are gigatrends.
COVID
was absolutely a gigatrend. It was the spark that I think ignited a lot of these other gigatrends that we're talking about. We talk about aging population. Our demographics are changing, not just in the U.S., but globally. And people say, what will healthcare look like in 20 years if we don't do something? You know, guess what? It's going to look like COVID day in, day out. So we've got to make some changes here, and we need some help, and hopefully AI will be able to help us to take on some of these huge challenges that we're facing.
Well, there's no doubt innovation, the things we see. I mean, the stuff we used to see on Star Trek in the beginning days, waving a wand over somebody and identifying what was wrong, looked like it's total science fiction. My daughter now sells a device. She is a salesperson for a device in Florida where they implant it in someone's chest and electrodes attached to the brain, and it's used to treat depression more than just putting them on more drugs. And apparently highly effective. Now, when I first heard about it, but it's FDA approved. I mean, you think that, you know, it is hocus pocus, but things like that, feedback that they have on bio thing, all that supposedly does provide some ability. But in the beginning, it looks, I'm not sure that really works.
Yeah, well, you know, look, in healthcare, diagnostics are going to improve considerably because of AI. AI is already being used for radiology to find things in x-rays that a radiologist could not find. The other part of this, though, in healthcare is, you know, I'd love to spend more than 10, 15 minutes with my primary care physician. AI will hopefully do a lot of the grunt work that primary care physician now spends half of his time doing. And that might mean that I can get a bit more of his or her time. So, you know, it's a balancing act, Larry. No technology is fully good or fully bad. What we're trying to do is hopefully get a bit more good out of it than bad.
I noticed how quickly you pivoted to add his or her as a doctor.
Yes, indeed.
you got a good PR firm going there. Tom, I'm looking at some of this when it talks about navigating the seismic shifts of a rapidly changing and uncertain world. And the fact that uncertainty exists there means how can AI be used to demolish and destroy?
That's one school of thought, Larry. A lot of people are you know, talking a lot of gloom and doom when it comes to AI. Bottom line is it's not smart enough to do any of that. AI is just a really good mimic. You know, we're the masters, it's the mimic, and we got to keep that in mind. It can identify patterns. It can do things for me a lot faster than I can, but it can't innovate. It can't truly be creative.
The 2001 Space Odyssey, back in 2001, HAL would not respond. It would not respond and charge and turn itself off.
Well, that's why we always have to have an on-off switch, Larry. One of the parts of AI that I think we have to keep in mind is that we are the masters, and there's got to be an on-off switch. There has to be some human intervention here. And once we lose sight of that, I think we lose sight of the goal, which is to make sure that our lives get better and that AI is just a tool to help us do that.
You're listening to Tom Galopoulos, and we're talking about the book Gigatrend, Six Forces That Are Changing the Future for Billions. And AI is being used to create other AI devices, correct?
It is. AI is to the point now where it can create very sophisticated code and programs and algorithms, absolutely.
So how do we know it's not putting in hidden code that it's going to mutate into being able to control itself, regardless of what the operator puts in.
Well, so far what we've seen, Larry, is that AI...
I'm sorry. You added those two words, so far.
So far. Well, a lot changing, and it's changing very quickly. And I wish I could predict exactly where we're going to be 20 years down the road. I think that the acceleration of this thing is beyond anything we've ever seen before. So is there risk there? Absolutely. We'd be idiots to say that there isn't some risk there. But that's why we've got to be attentive. That's why we have to make sure that we focus on how we make sure AI is doing things that we want it to be doing and not doing things that could put us at risk or put us in danger. But at the end of the day, the thing is not sentient. It's not living. It's not alive. It feeds off of the data that we give it. So the really important thing is that we give it data that we know is clean, that we know is validated, that we know makes sense. In the same way that the FDA approves a drug after a lot of testing, you shouldn't just let AI and unleash it on the population. You should make sure that it does what it's supposed to do before you put it into practice.
Well, I do know in the beginning, the first thing I learned about computers is junk in is junk out.
You bet. That's exactly it. And all AI is a very sophisticated way to take a whole lot of data and make some sense out of it. And if you feed it a lot of junk, that's what you're going to get. And that's happened. You know, we've seen this. Google has a project called Gemini. And recently they got put under the microscope because Gemini started spewing forth a lot of what's called hallucinations in the AI world, things that were just patently false.
In other words, it was used to promote a racism, making a black George Washington, a black woman pope.
Exactly.
So how did that get in there? Did someone put it in there? How would something like that happen?
Here's the thing. This is kind of like, you know, think about the way we raise kids. When you raise kids, you don't just throw them out into the world and say, just, you know, see whatever you can see and repeat it. You put guardrails in place. And what happened with Google's AI was that it was given a lot of junk. It wasn't told to look specifically at data sets that had already been validated. It was just told, hey, go look at all this and make sense of it. And how do you see the world based on that? And look, data has bias. Data has all kinds. Look at Facebook if you want to see bias and mini echo chambers. And this is the, unfortunately, the state of social media today. If AI is feeding off of that, you're going to get that right back at you. We've got to be careful about what we feed it.
The other issue is not that AI turns against us, but AI is against AI, and which one will come out on top, which is a stronger AI version competing against another one in combat or anything else.
Well, we're already seeing that. You brought up the issue of combat, right? The reality is that war is being fought increasingly more and more by drones and by remote devices that are powered by artificial intelligence. And this is, again, where we just have to pay attention. We can't just unleash the thing and say, go for it. We have to make sure that we put those guardrails in place.
You hit on a point there that has been brought up previously before, that maybe it would decide, no, it's a perfect time to hit this target. Even though there will be innocence, it's a time and override and go ahead and carry it out.
Absolutely. Well, look, the same problem exists, Larry, with autonomous vehicles. If an autonomous vehicle is in a situation where it's going to take out a baby in a carriage or an 80-year-old, how does it make that decision? We got some tough things ahead of us here that we're going to have to think through and really come to terms with. The bottom line is, you know, you can't stare down a tsunami. This is coming at us, and we've got to be aware. We've got to use it. We have to become familiar with it and better understand what the implications are. But we're not going to slow down the technology. That cat is out of the bag.
One final point then in the last 30 seconds. You still believe it is good for the future?
I do. I believe the net is positive. You know, we built nuclear weapons that had enormous potential to destroy people, but we also got nuclear medicine to save millions of people. So it's always the net positive I'm looking for. I do think it's optimistic.
All right, Tom Kalopoulos, along with Nathan Palmer, wrote the book Gigatrends, and I highly recommend you take a closer look. Gigatrends, 6 Forces Changing the Future for Billions. Thank you, Tom.
Larry, thank you.
You bet. Coming up, KJP and the President's Notes.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
I'm always glad to have new sponsors, but I have turned some down. See, I only endorse clients if I believe in them. And I've been a spokesman for John Beal for 10 years. Through those years, listeners said they went with John Beal because they trusted me. And just recently, a woman named Mary wrote, "We got a John Beal roof based on your recommendation." Thank you, Mary, and all the others for calling John Beal, 1-800-NEW-ROOF, 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
No matter how large or small your digging project may be, no matter how urban or rural, you must always call 811 before any digging project. 811 is our national one-call number, alerting your local utility companies to come out and mark any lines they have near your dig site. So before you do this or this, make sure you do this. For digging projects big or small, make the call to 811, brought to you by Common Ground Alliance.
Sometimes you want to do something extra special for someone. Vincent's Jewelers can help you. Maybe you want to do something for yourself, mark a date, something you accomplished. It doesn't have to be anything really expensive, but it has to mean something now and for the future. Vincent's, locally owned, just asked for the chance to work with you, as they have with me, on Olive, just east of 270. Every day, new specials at vincentsjewelers.com or Vincent's Facebook.
The United States Deputy Sheriff's Association is a national nonprofit and the largest non-governmental provider of services to law enforcement. The USDSA assists city, county, state, and federal agencies with free safety equipment donations and officer survival training, along with cash donations to families of law enforcement officers who perish in the line of duty, a citizen awareness program, and more. For more information on United States Deputy Sheriff's Association, please visit usdeputy.org.
I have a personal story about why I trust McGuire Moving and Storage. A relative needed to escape an unhealthy relationship. Josh, Christine, and the McGuire team were understanding, even comforting. That's why I'm honored to endorse McGuire. Since 1935, McGuire's been moving and caring for families. So, moving a home, office, local, or long distance, McGuireMoving.com, McGuireMoving.com.
This is News Talk STL.
Well, they used to make a living off of bathtub gin. When the hippie showed up, the weed was in. Well, they profit off of weakness and they always have. Now meth is a recipe for cold hard cash. Something's cooking and it just ain't right. Hell's Kitchen gonna burn.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
So there is a truck billboard running around Louisville, Kentucky. It was at least yesterday. It was slamming Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, Republican of Kentucky. The billboard is reading Fentanyl Mitch and has a question on it. Why hasn't Mitch McConnell done more to stop the Chinese fentanyl crisis in Kentucky? And with the flashing sign, it said, answer, follow the money. The background of the text was red with five yellow stars seen on the Chinese flag to the left of the message. The other side of the truck billboard featured a photo of Mitch McConnell next to the name Fentanyl Mitch and the word cocaine crossed out. The letter M is the same Mitch on the billboard. Was a blue M-labeled pill like the fentanyl-laced M30 pills that are light in color with an M imprinted on one side and 30 on the other. Obviously references to what is happening in the nation now with the illegal drugs coming across. And I told you yesterday about nitazines or could be 10 to 20 times more deadly than fentanyl. And police officers or paramedics or even individuals who are carrying the Narcan shot that you would give someone with an overdose and possibly save a life, more than likely you would. You won't with the nitazines. You'd have to hit them four, five times to maybe save their lives. The billboard truck, as I said, going through downtown Louisville, Kentucky. Now, Mitch McConnell has stepped forward to endorse Donald Trump for re-election in 2024. That is a signal of unity against Joe Biden, because Mitch McConnell had been working behind the curtains a lot with Chuck Schumer on trying to put together that bill that would basically tie any money we wanted for the border or Israel to Ukraine. And they were proposing, this is a border bill. This is what you guys wanted. All right, well, we'll pass it without any border provisions. Of course, it's not going to get passed anyway. But the key here being, politics makes strange bedfellows, does it not? Mitch McConnell was like this with Chuck Schumer. If you're watching on our live stream, you see what I'm doing. He was like this with Donald Trump. But now, and it's not for any political advantage necessarily for Mitch, because he's going to step aside as a chair in November anyway, but he probably felt he was going to lose the chairmanship anyway because he has been doing these deals with Mitch McConnell, not being a good Republican, been a good rhino Republican in name only. 40 years in Congress, and he sold out to the other side. So now he's stepping forward, and he's praising Trump for working with him to, quote, accomplish great things for the American people during his term in office. He also noted policy successes of, quote, tax reform that supercharged our economy and a generational change of our federal judiciary, most importantly, the Supreme Court. He's talking about what Trump did with the Supreme Court and, again, the judiciary, and getting rid of numerous restrictions upon businesses and people, as he said, supercharging our economy. Is there anyone who could say that Joe Biden has supercharged our economy? He super dumped the economy. You can argue with me all day long. I'm just telling you two things. One, go out and check the prices of what you're paying now compared to what you did when Trump was in office. Period. Two, have you invited an illegal to stay at your house lately? I mean, we're looking for housing for them. If you're really sure that Biden's got the right path, then why aren't you opening the doors? For that matter, why aren't they opening up parts of the White House for him or the office buildings in D.C.? This is a signal of unity, and the endorsement came just minutes after Nikki Haley suspended her case after losing last night. Speaking of Nikki Haley, the latest report for the Federal Election Commission that tracks all the spending for a campaign points out that former Governor Nikki Haley spent more than $114 million during her Republican primary. And keep in mind, a lot of that money came from Democrat donors who were looking for a chance to make sure Trump does not survive. They wanted to make sure that he was ousted. She invested $0 in her own campaign, but she accepted donations from Democrats, including Democrat billionaire donor Reid Hoffman, co-founder of LinkedIn. Did you know a progressive founded LinkedIn? So more than 75% of the money she raised during the campaign was from large donors. Trump obviously had a great Super Tuesday, winning 14 out of 15 primaries. CNN exit poll of Republican voters in North Carolina showed that among a 16% who approved of Joe Biden, 83% of them also supported Nikki Haley. So the question is, will they switch to Trump? No, not likely at all. They'll probably just stay home. Don't you stay home. Don't take it that Trump's going to win automatically. You get out there and show with the strength of numbers. Trump's third GOP nomination represents one of the greatest political comebacks in the history of politics. But here's the other thing. Nikki Haley, not spending her own money, but with all those who were willing to give her money to burn to get rid of Trump, they spent more than $114 million, and what did she win? Vermont and Washington, D.C. Less than 90 delegates for the GOP convention this summer. You need 1,215. Trump is right about 900 now and should surpass the number by mid-March at the latest. And, of course, don't forget, tomorrow night we do have the State of the Union address. This is where the president comes forward and tells you how great things are and why I should be reelected because I have made things better. We discussed in the last hour, but I feel I want to make sure I impress on you in case you missed that hour. Often presidents will use that as an occasion to recognize someone, invite them as a guest, maybe to sit with the first lady, and call them out and talk about their accolades or what they've done or maybe what they've gone through. Maybe they survived a horrific hurricane or something of that nature, and they're showing them as an example. The family of Lakin Hope Riley, say the name, Lakin Hope Riley, is not being invited to the State of the Union address. They would be the parents of that young Georgia nursing student just out for a jog, ended up being ambushed and her head bashed in by a man who's charged, who is an illegal. Joining me in the country. Why is he in the country? Because Joe Biden led him in the country. And then they gave him parole papers, probation type. Go about the country, but cause no more additional issues. You've already broken our federal law, if we were enforcing it, of entering our country illegally, but go ahead. I should also point out, because we have not talked about it a great deal, we're also getting a lot of invaders and illegals coming across our northern border. We're trying to watch them and stay on top of them, but many of them are coming across that way because they realize maybe things are tightening up a little bit too much down there. And more than likely, many of those coming across there are also like those who come across the southern border in camouflage or in the dark of night. They don't want to be identified, don't want to be seen. Do you think Joe Biden's going to talk about how he has got good control of the illegal immigration? No. What he's going to do when he talks to immigration, he's going to talk about this has been an issue for our nation for decades. Presidents of both parties, we need to resolve it. I will agree. I will agree we need to resolve it. But the first thing you do now before you try to tackle all the mess that's been created, shut the damn border, period. Shut it. And yet he will claim, I don't have the authority. You had the authority to sign by executive order to wipe out Trump and his stay in Mexico policy and everything else that has kept. You basically signed 60 to 90 bills authorizing illegal authorization, illegal entry into our country. If you could do that by executive order, you could certainly reverse them. Now, tomorrow, Joe Biden will have a teleprompter. That's good for him, possibly. But as he's given the State of the Union address, it's going to be, normally they run 40-plus minutes, maybe up to an hour. It'll be late at night. He might not want to stay that long, but he will have a teleprompter. And if he can follow it, maybe he'll make some good, solid points that he wants to make and not look like a buffoon. I don't like our president looking that way. It doesn't look good for our nation because other leaders around the world will also be watching. But lately, when it comes to even dealing with basic information, Biden has had to rely on note cards in front of him. In fact, Fox's reporter Peter Ducey took note of that and asked KJP about those notes.
You're upset because the president has note cards? You're asking me a question about the president having note cards?
I'm asking why.
The president who has had probably one of the most successful first 3 years of an administration than any modern day president.
That's a whole lot of not answering questions, Joe.
He is polling lower, Joe Biden is, Todd, than any president in polling history at this stage of his presidency. And here you have Karine Jean-Pierre, who needs her own share of note cards, telling you that this is the most successful 3 years of any presidency in history. I mean, it is beyond, I can't even give you a response now without choking on my own utter disbelief on these answers. And look, here's the bottom line. You saw Donald Trump take, what, an hour of questions, or is at obviously a podium giving a speech after his victory. And here you have Joe Biden saying, I may get in trouble if I take questions. That line that he's used for 3 years, literally telling you that his handlers say that he shouldn't talk to the press because he may get in trouble. That's the problem here right now. You have a president who is protected, who doesn't have any confidence in his own answers. His handlers are petrified to talk to the press while Donald Trump is out there showing that he has far more energy and wants the job far more than Joe Biden does right now.
Now, of course, you heard Peter Ducey asking KJB, and she was almost befuddled and astonished. And you're asking me, the president using note card, you're asking me that kind of question? I'm sure she would have preferred, what kind of ice cream does he prefer? But she was acting so offended that you'd ask such a stupid question. We all rely on note cards and crib sheets when you're giving a major speech or you're dealing with stuff. And every time I've done an interview with someone, I make it clear to them, if I bring something up that involves a bunch of numbers or stats and you don't have it handy, just tell me, we'll get to it later, because I'm not trying to ambush you. I'm not good at recalling stuff like that off the top of my head. And when you want to be precise, you want a source. So I don't have an issue with doing it, but the very fact that he's doing it more often, and then they get offended because you ask about it. This takes me back to a piece I was discussing previously in The Hill. The Hill is a publication that covers Congress and the events happening on Capitol Hill and leans more left than right, but the writing here is a little bit more direct. Democrats are beginning to hit the panic button as an implosion in former President Trump's campaign fails to materialize, and a series of polls suggest Biden is weaker than he was 4 years ago. He is trailing Trump in polls of several battleground states, basically underscoring concerns his message is not gaining attraction and traction with swing voters. Many Democrats were sure that Trump's legal issues would submarine him, but then we had that unanimous decision Monday on favor of the 14th Amendment case that it cannot be used against the president. That was a unanimous decision. And remember, some members of the left, including Conway, stating it was shoddy work by all the Supreme Court justices, basically calling out the three liberals as doing a shoddy job. There's a Democrat strategist, former advisor to the Senate Democrats' campaign arm, Steve Jarding, and he's being quoted as saying, Democrat lawmakers should be worried about the emerging political picture. If you're Donald Trump and his team, you go, wow, I'll take this any day of the week. He's comparing Trump's strong political position to Biden's failing. Then we have a Bloomberg Morning Consult poll published showing Biden trailing Trump in several critical states, Arizona, Georgia, Pennsylvania, Michigan, North Carolina, Nevada, and Wisconsin. And he's trailing. And if Biden ends up winning in even one or two of those states I just listed, we're going to have to take a much closer look. Then there's a New York Times Siena poll that showed Trump leading Biden 48% to 43% nationwide. So Joe Biden will get up there tomorrow and do his best to say in his State of the Union, look what I have accomplished. Maybe what he needs to say is, don't look, just listen to me. That's not going to happen either. As always, thanks for listening. Remember our pledge, one nation under God.